My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Janice will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Janice. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Daniel will read the steps.
Hey, I'm Daniel. I'm an alcoholic. 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And Sean will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Sean. I'm an alcoholic. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the
format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the 10th tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the 10th tradition is Joel.
I'm Joel, and I'm an alcoholic. And I do this in love and service for AA and Atlantic Group, which I love. You know, unlike the steps, which come from our background, from the Oxford Group, the traditions are really handcrafted by Bill. And the love he put it in those traditions, I think, is the respect that I have for this program. Even the word ought. I never even understood how many times the word ought is listed there. It's listed a lot. But especially in the 10th tradition, ought means it's the right thing to do. Well, it's the right thing to do, and because it helps to keep us together. The traditions are like the skeleton of the body. If we don't have the skeleton, we just don't go anywhere. We fall apart. So especially with this tradition, I've heard that this was the first tradition that Bill actually thought about. Someone came to Bill and said, Bill, you know, things aren't going that well. It might be that AA might one day not be what it is now. And Bill had done some research looking back, you know, just looking back and making sure that he wasn't making the mistakes were made by the past. We have a predecessor, the Washingtonian group that started in Baltimore. And that grew really, really fast. It was built with alcoholics, talking about alcoholics, talking about alcoholism, and then everything went bad. They started inviting outside speakers who weren't alcoholics. They started getting involved in talking about slavery. They started talking about banning alcohol, which did not bear well for people who were alcoholic. And that organization, going from 100,000 members, it grew much faster than AA when it first started, fizzled out. So we learned something from them. We're kind of like Gerber. Babies are their business. Recovery is our business, our only business. And that's important. Because it's the language of the heart. As far as opinions, you know, what happens in these rooms is there's a spiritual feeling that draws us together and lifts us up. It draws us together so we can act as a unit. That's where the unity comes from. And in coming together, I don't want to have anything to do to explode that open. Because I would not be here, I would not be alive without this program. I need these meetings to be here because without them, we die. I would die. The kind of controversies that have happened in the past, things like you never hear people talk in a meeting about the mosque at Ground Zero. I'd be surprised if I heard about that, or a political candidate. You know, and I'm in particularly good areas of the service that I do for the Atlantic Group. I sit in the back of the room doing literature on Thursday nights. I'm the guy that holds up the beginner's packets. And so, interesting enough, although it's important to sit in the front, it's interesting when you sit in the front, there are very few outside issues. You just see you and the speaker, you listen. When you sit in the back, you see the caps, you see the t-shirts, might say something on it, like a bar or the National Rifle Association. You know, these are things that, you know, I've sat in meetings and I go, my goodness, do I really want to be there? This is anonymous. I want to feel comfortable. I think I would like us all to be comfortable. Or let's say I see people walk in. I also do greeting at meetings. Those who are greeters, you know, people walk in. Sometimes they have buttons on, vote for somebody, buy this. And, you know, there's really no advertising here. We don't see posters on the wall. Like, for instance, you know, if I'm for one candidate and I mention that and someone else is against that candidate, it just explodes us apart. There was one meeting that was thinking about having a vending machine to sell cans of pop, soda, in the meeting hall. And there was a discussion, you know, like, oh, we should have Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Diet Sprite. And it was thought, well, that's an outrage. We don't want to put that as part of the meeting. And actually, I did go to a meeting out of town, and they did have a vending machine in that room, and I thought about this. And throughout the entire meeting, I heard ker-chink, ker-chink, ker-chink. The cash was going in, they pressed the button, you heard the soda coming out. Very distracting. Very outside issue. So, that's the thing. I want, for me, AA is pure. It's unadulterated. It's just, it's what it is. It's something that's really indescribable. It's a feeling. It's a movement. And anything that stops that direct flow from higher power and then me to other people through higher power just takes away the power of this program. And just how Bill handcrafted every word, like the word ought, like it's the right thing to do. It's a softened way. It's not should, because we don't govern. We actually serve from below. It's just, and that keeps us together. Sometimes in meetings, you do hear inside the meeting hall, people will talk about political aspects. There was a case at a meeting where it was like a half hour before the meeting. Half hour before the meeting, one of the guys reading the newspaper, and we had just started bombing in Iraq. And one guy says, oh, what do you think of this? And some other guy says, oh, what do you think of that? And there was a third guy who goes, you know, that has no business being talked about in this meeting hall. So the first guy goes, says, hey, there's no meeting here yet. It's half an hour to go. Well, that guy who made the comment that it wasn't the right thing to do leaves the room, never to be seen again. Because the issue is, even when there's... when they open the doors here for the first time at 4 o'clock, 4:30, whenever they open the doors, God is in the room long before we're in the room. And God stays in the room long after we're out of the room. And so to change that power, to change the dynamics, just really, it's almost like profanity. It is not welcoming, not just to the newcomer, but to the next person who is going to come in the door that we don't even know about yet. Because it's almost like we're a magnetic force. We're a program of attraction. And anything we say that makes someone say, I don't know if I like that. And I know sometimes people talk about medications. Major issue. Because there are some people who medically do need certain medications. We are not doctors. But if someone makes that decision and say, you're not sober if you're taking such and such, it may cause some harm. But medication is also an important outside issue to consider. Now, I've got to tell you, I'm the last one who doesn't throw rocks at glass houses. I've made my own mistakes. I was at the beginners meeting about a year and a half ago, and I answered a question quoting the New York Times. Quoting the New York Times, and I'll tell you, I have not answered a question since, but I will. And someone says, we don't go by the New York Times. We go by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the purity of the whole thing. From the front of the room to the literature table, it's AA-related material. There's nothing that tells anything about any treatment center. And it doesn't say anything about anything on television. It's just very much pure. And in doing so, it keeps that energy going. It keeps the energy that keeps the meeting together so that I can come and become sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you very much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Michelle.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 2nd, 2008. My sponsor is Randy, and I am working on step 9, living in 10, 11, and 12. I would like to say thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of everyone today. I'm very fearful right now. I'm very anxious, and more than 2 years ago, the way I would deal with this anxiety is through alcohol, and today that is not my solution. My solution is AA, and the tools such as calling my sponsor, talking with another alcoholic, going to meetings, sharing about it in meetings, and most importantly for me, to pray. So how did I get here? I am originally from Aurora, Colorado. It's a suburb of Denver. And where I grew up, there weren't a lot of black families. My family was one of only two black families in the neighborhood. I went to Catholic school. I was the only black kid in this class. And from the beginning, I felt very different. I felt less than. I felt not as good as. I remember being put in an advanced reading class, and I remember thinking to myself, I don't belong here. I don't know why they put me in here. I have no idea why I'm in this class. But obviously, I belonged in there if they put me in there, but I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. My mom is an alcoholic, and that also made me feel really different. It was kept a secret from the outside world. And I really thought that I was the only person on the planet who had a parent who was an alcoholic. I was very ashamed about it. And so that was my childhood. I grew up with a lot of fear and secrecy. And my first drink was when I was 16 or 17. I drank beer, and I hated the taste, but I loved the feeling it gave me. I was laughing at all the jokes. I was very loose. I felt great. And the second time I got drunk was at a high school party. And I didn't party a lot in high school at all, so this was my first like big high school party experience. And I got drunk and threw up, but kept going. And I just remember, though, at that party, all the cool kids were there, and I was able to talk to them, and I was able to feel just as rich as they were, just as good as they were, and I loved that feeling. And then I went to college, and I drank a lot in college as well, and I justified it because everyone was getting drunk in college, so, you know, I'm just, you know, doing what everyone else is doing. And I was a blackout drinker. I drank to get drunk. That was always my goal. After college, I moved to D.C. That's where my brother lived. And I just remember drinking with him and his friends, and it was really a bonding experience to drink with my brother. I really enjoyed drinking with him. We had fun, a lot of laughs, and I thought it was great. And my drinking continued in D.C., and then I moved up to New York in May of 2001. And the progression of the disease continued, and I remember picking my friends. Like, I didn't know hardly anyone when I moved up here, but I picked friends based on if they drank. You know, I didn't want to be bothered with anyone who didn't drink. And I would always observe how people drank, like if they, you know, would leave half of their glass of wine or whatever, I'd always be tempted to ask for the rest because I'm like, why would you waste that? You know what I mean? That was my mentality. And the last 2 years or so of my drinking were really the hardest for me because I couldn't communicate with others. My way of telling you I was mad at you was to give you the silent treatment. That was the way that I controlled you and made you see how I felt. And I also had a trouble with honesty. I couldn't be honest, even when the truth would do. Even if I knew the person wouldn't be mad at me if I told them the truth, I found myself lying, and I didn't know why. I also had a lot of suicidal thoughts. I would go out and get drunk and come home and just be angry at the world, angry at God, cursing God, and all of that, and just wanting to die, wanting to kill myself. And I would fantasize about killing myself, but I was thinking, you know, well, what would people think of me if they knew I killed myself? Like, I was so consumed with what people thought about me, I couldn't even kill myself. I couldn't even end it, you know? So I just continued in this lifestyle and was miserable, was unhappy. And Christmas 2000, 7, my brother called me and told me he went to his first AA meeting. And I was like, really? You went to AA? I was shocked because we drank the same way. And so it made me think, you know, if he thinks he has a problem, then what does that mean about my drinking? But I quickly brushed that aside because, you know, I didn't think that I could live a life without drinking. I needed it to socialize. And, you know, when I was drunk, I was funny. I was the life of the party. And I thought I needed that. So anyway, a couple months later, he said he was going to rehab. And I was shocked because I was like, that's a little extreme. Like, I didn't, you know, we have the same drinking. And if you think you need rehab, again, what does that mean for me? So I went out for family week. He asked me to go out, and I said yes. And then immediately I was angry at him. It's his fault that I, you know, I'm a people pleaser. So I went out to his rehab facility, and there was this exercise called leveling. And it's where you sit knee to knee facing each other, and you say, when you do this, it makes me feel this way. And so I was excited, like I had time to prepare, and I was like, yes, I'm going to tell him off for all the stuff he did to me. And I remember thinking, what could he possibly say about me? I'm perfect. I'm the best sister in the world. Like, there's no way he's going to say anything negative about me. So then we do the exercise. I did mine, and then it was his turn, and he said, when you get drunk and take cabs and take the subway, it makes me feel fearful. And immediately the tears started rolling down my face because I knew that he was right. And I knew that, you know, there was a problem that I wasn't looking at. But again, I wasn't willing to look at it seriously at that point. And I kept continuing drinking, but I was very thoughtful about my drinking, and it wasn't the same again. So fast forward to Labor Day 2008, I went on a weekend trip with my friend Lacey, and she had told me that a friend that we party with is pregnant and she hasn't been drinking, and that because she hasn't been drinking, she had clarity. And I was like, wow, clarity, you get that from not drinking? Like, I had no clue. And I needed clarity in my life. I was in a dark place, and so I decided I was going to stop drinking for a year. I was just going to experiment. So I waited a couple weeks, and then I started going to meetings, but of course I was better then. This was just my experiment. And so I was better then, and I was scared because, like, people were saying they had 25 years, and I was like, oh, I can't do that. But someone suggested just for today, you can stay sober. So this program, so I've been sober for a little over 2 years now, and I have real gratitude in my life today, whereas before it was like, thank God I got home without getting caught, you know, drunk driving, or thank God I got caught home safely without something bad happening. I have gratitude in my life. I pray today. I have a God of my understanding who loves me and is not a punishing God. And I have a sponsor who's so helpful to me. I'm so grateful to Randy for taking me through the steps. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunities to speak and to be in AA and for all of you. Thank you so much.
And our main speaker tonight is Thea.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. My name is Thea, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I wish you could see what I see. I wish you could see what I see. You are my tribe, and you are really good looking. It's like looking into the sun. It's so wonderful to be here tonight. I've done a lot of spiritual growing in this room. AG was my home group for a long time, and I'm really glad to be back here. It is like looking into the sun. My sobriety date is August 31st, 1984, and I live in Seattle now, and my sponsor is Cindy C., And I have a lot of my sober family in the room here tonight. I'm very grateful to see all your beautiful faces. And thank you so much, Jeff, for inviting me to speak. It's an honor and a privilege to speak at any AA meeting, but especially here. Well, if you're a newcomer, I want to welcome you. If you're sitting in this room at all, you're a statistical anomaly. And if you're sitting in here and you're sober, then you're really beating the odds. So congratulations. And if you're a newcomer, I want to welcome you to AA, and I want to say that whatever you think this is, and whoever you think we are, you're probably wrong. I know I was. I came in with a whole bunch of ideas about what this whole thing was about, and I don't think any of them were right. So hang on to your seat. You're in for the ride of your life, and it's really great beyond your wildest dreams. So the bad news is that we have a fatal disease. The good news is there is a program of recovery. The bad news is it only works for one day. The good news is that day happens to be today. So that's where we are. My life is huge. I am so overwhelmed. Since I saw you last, I've had two children, twins, because I can do nothing in moderation. Still, some things don't change. I'm working on it. And I am married. That came first, actually. But I moved to Seattle, 3,000 miles away. And I just published a book, which is, I used to sit in row 69 in this room, and I used to look up at that picture of that guy holding that book. And it was my dream. And I used to think, it's never going to happen for me. It's never going to happen for me. When I came in, I thought, it's never going to happen for me. And I was so spiritually bankrupt that I couldn't be happy that it was working for you. And I have to say that I am not that person anymore. And that's as a direct result of taking actions I don't understand or agree with and working the steps. So, my life is huge. I am totally overwhelmed all the time. I wake up and I'm a nickel short. I wake up, I open my eyes and I'm a nickel short. And that's really good news, because that means I need help. And that means that I go to my higher power for help. And I go to you for help. If I woke up with what I needed and I thought, oh, I got this now, I can handle it, I'd be in a lot of trouble. I probably wouldn't be standing right here right now. So I wake up a nickel short, I'm totally overwhelmed. And what I used to do is I used to think, okay, there's way too much on my plate, so I have to manage things. I have to figure out what I can take off my plate, and I have to figure out who I can delegate to. So that was my strategy for years, and it led me into my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So now, when I feel overwhelmed, I hurl myself into service, which sounds a lot like putting more things on my plate. And I know that that makes no sense to some of you, you newcomers. I know that makes no sense, and I have to agree with you. It doesn't make any sense. But guess what? It works. The only thing this program has going for it is that it works, and I'm so glad it does, and I can't explain it to you. So my story is that I am the only alcoholic in my family. There's no alcoholism in my family. I have a lovely, lovely family. I have wonderful parents. I have a nice sister and a nice brother. I grew up in a nice house. Even my cat and my dog were nice to me. Everything was really great. And I had my first suicidal thought when I was 9. First, it was just, you know, I had this funny feeling that everything was just a little itchy and scratchy, like it was almost perfect. Things were almost really good, almost. And if things could just be, oh, I don't know, tilted a little bit to the left or 10 minutes earlier or a little bit more blue, that would be great. And then it got worse than that, and things got more itchier and more scratchier. And I started to feel like maybe there was something wrong with me. I started to feel a little trapped. I started to feel like maybe I was in a cage, somehow trapped. But if I'd gone to a doctor and he said, you know, point to where it hurts, I would have said, how do you point to your life? Like, where's my life? I couldn't really say what was wrong, but I was sure there was something wrong. I was sure that I was different. I was different from you. Somehow I was kind of on the outside looking in, and this started really from my first memories. So I started to try to figure out what was wrong. I started to become educated about this. How do I feel? How long have I felt this way? Why do I feel this way? Who knows that I feel this way? How do I feel about those people who feel that I feel this way? What do I think about my feelings about being this way? I started to really educate myself. I went straight to the bookstore and I worked my way down the self-help shelf. And I did a lot of therapy. I did all kinds of really fancy stuff. I did ashrams and rebirthing and Jungian analysis. And I spent thousands of dollars and way, way many, I was going to say hours, but it was probably more like months in a therapist's office trying to figure out how to manage my feelings and how to become free, how to get out of this cage that I knew I was in. And I really became kind of an expert in it. I could tell you how what the circumference of the bars were, how tall they were, how far apart they were, what they were made out of, what it felt like to be in there. I really became an expert in my cage, and I was really invested in telling you about my cage and having you understand as much as you could about my cage also. I knew everything about it. And so I actually, you know, spent quite a bit of money for that knowledge too. But it really didn't help me. I was still in the cage, even though I had a very thorough understanding about it. So eventually I tried to manage these feelings in other ways, using alcohol. I started to drink very, very young, and I drank anything and everything. I drank medically. I drank to get out of my skin. I really didn't care what it tasted like, what it was mixed with. I didn't care. I drank as fast as I could. One time I timed myself. I drank a quart of Jack Daniels in 46 minutes. So I just drank it as fast as I could. And I don't have very many memories of my drinking. I wonder why. I was clearly a blackout drinker. That was my objective in drinking that way. And I once, though, after coming to AA many years later, I talked to someone who knew me then, and I said, was I a happy drunk or a sad drunk? Because you guys told great stories. And I thought, I don't remember any of those stories of mine. And he said, you were a horizontal drunk. So really, I just wanted to get out. I wanted to get unconscious. I wanted to get out of my skin. So I drank as fast as I could. And then I started to use other things, anything. I was not particular. I was not a connoisseur. I just wanted to fix it. Fix this cage that nobody else could see. Boy, I was frustrated that nobody could see this. Oh, it was so frustrating. So now I not only had feelings about the cage, I had feelings about the fact that nobody, you, couldn't acknowledge that I was in this cage or help me. So it was really quite a dilemma. But I was unconscious a lot of the time, so that helped. And it led me into a state of just pitiful demoralization that's described in the big book. I eventually saw that I had a problem with drinking. I always wanted to be free. That was my whole goal. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be out of the cage. And so I eventually saw that I couldn't stop drinking, or at least that I was drinking every day. I don't know if I couldn't stop, but it appeared to me that I was drinking every day. Although I wasn't really sure what the truth was anymore, because I told myself a lot of stories, and I told them so many times that it seemed like the truth to me. When I came in, and they read in the preamble, you know, except for those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, I would get chills. My blood would run cold. I knew they were talking about me. So if you feel that way, even you can find recovery. I did. If it can work for me, it can work for anyone. But I told a lot of stories to myself, to other people. It was hard to manage. So eventually I got to a state where I just drank all the time, and I didn't answer the phone anymore, and I didn't open the mail, and I lived alone, and I really didn't want any friends, because I didn't want any witnesses. As I said, I drank really fast, so there was no socializing. That was not part of my story. But I wasn't clear if there really was a problem, because sometimes I would feel okay, and I would think, there's no problem. There's no problem here. And as my sponsor says, all feelings are permanent. That's the lie our disease tells us. In the moment that you have the feeling, I feel like I've always felt this way, and I always will feel this way. In the moment of that feeling, I believe that it has been forever and it will be forever. The reality is, my feelings are like weather. I mean, wait 5 minutes and it's changed. But I don't feel in the moment, you know. I don't believe that. So I decided to buy a calendar and some adhesive dots. And I decided, since I couldn't tell, I really couldn't even remember like whether I drank or not, because really, what constitutes a day anyway? I mean, if you don't sleep at all, if you haven't gone to sleep, is it still the same? It's still the same day, right? Or do you go by the clock? So it wasn't clear to me whether I was drinking every day or not. So I bought some adhesive dots. I decided I would put an adhesive dot on the calendar day if I drank, and I would try to get days without dots. And that was how I could tell if I was, you know, I now have a much more sophisticated approach to honesty, but that's where I got to, as an example. So it was clear to me I had no days without dots, and I was drinking every day. How could this happen to me? I came from a really nice family. I had every advantage. How could this possibly have happened to me? And how was I going to get myself out of it? Well, kind of by accident, I still had a job, and there was a woman there who was one of us, and she was very vocal about it. It's an anonymous program, but in a way, I'm really grateful to Diane that she wasn't very anonymous about it. She talked about it all the time. I guess now she was probably talking to sponsees or her sponsor, but I heard a lot about it because she sat in the cubicle right near me, so I was always listening to it. And so I kind of wandered into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took one look at you. I walked down kind of halfway down the steps to the church basement and peeked in. James will want me to say at this point I had blue hair and was wearing a black leather jacket that had the slogan stenciled on the back, "She's your funeral." In other words, I was friendly and a vision of loveliness. And someone you really wanted to get to know. I walked into the room, I walked halfway down the steps, peeked into the room, looked at all of you and said, "Oh no, no way," and walked back out to the parking lot and discovered that I had locked my keys in my car. So my higher power is a genius. My higher power, my very first meeting, forced me to come in and ask you people for help. What I came in for was a coat hanger to break into my car. And you know what? A lot of you people had a lot of experience breaking into cars. was like the perfect place to come for this. And you've been helping me ever since. What I got was the key of willingness, not just to my car, but to a whole new life that is beyond my wildest dreams. And I am so grateful. This is not what I came in for. What I came in for was just to stop drinking, and I really would have been okay with that. I just wanted to stop drinking. Can we leave it right here at fine? My higher power wants it to be, like, fabulous. And I'm, like, good with fine. Let's keep it here. This is good. I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. This is good. My higher power wants it to be fabulous. So anyway, I walked down there. I asked for a coat hanger. You helped me. I had to wait until the end of the meeting to ask you because, of course, I came late. Can you believe it? A newcomer coming late. I came late to the meeting, so I had to wait till the end of the meeting. So I sat through the meeting, and I heard some fabulous stories, and I kind of liked you enough to kind of keep circling and sniffing. I came back again, and I listened to a few more. You guys seemed to be telling the truth, which, as I pointed out earlier, is something that really I couldn't achieve without a stationery store. So I was interested in you, and I circled and sniffed, and I came and listened, and I kept waiting for the catch. And if you're a newcomer, you may be thinking the same thing. Where's the catch? You can ask me for money, a political endorsement. I mean, what do you want from me? Where's the catch? It was so strange. There didn't seem to be one. You kept saying, keep coming back. You would say, just hang in there. And I would say, how can I hang in there? And you'd say, just let go. And I would say, well, how do I let go? And you'd say, hang in there. It never made any sense to me. But as I said, it worked. So I wasn't sure I was an alcoholic. You know, as I said, there was no alcoholism in my family. And so I didn't really think that this is what I had. I thought I had some very, very esoteric and special biochemical imbalance that was yet to be discovered, very exclusive. Let's call it Theaism. I had Theaism. I had a pretty bad case, but that's what I had. So I came in, and I didn't say that I was Thea. I was an alcoholic. I just sat in the back and came late, left early for a while. And I met this girl named Trish, and she had something like 30 days or something ridiculous, you know. And she told me, why don't you try 90, because I was hamsters. Am I an alcoholic or am I not an alcoholic? Some days I feel like maybe I am an alcoholic. Some days I feel like some minutes I feel like I'm an alcoholic. Some minutes I feel like I'm not an alcoholic. She said, why don't you try 90 meetings in 90 days and then determine on the 91st day if you think you're an alcoholic. And that was, you know, crazy. I was talking about acting my way into a new way of thinking, where it's clear to all of us, right, that you have to think your way into a new way of acting. Wrong. That's the way I'd always done it. So I had nothing better to do, really. So I did. I tried 90 meetings in 90 days. And if you're new, I really suggest that. It seems impossible. Actually, I just did one meeting in one day 90 times. That's really the truth of what I did, because 90 meetings in 90 days seemed just way too much. But I did do one meeting in one day 90 times. And on the 91st day, Trish said, so are you an alcoholic? And I wasn't sure. So she said, well, is your life better now than it was 91 days ago? Oh, wow, did she have me there. Yeah, it was much better. So I was sleeping through the night without passing out. I knew whether I drank the day before. I had some of that clarity that Michelle was talking about. And so I determined, obviously, that whatever Theaism was, it was so parallel to alcoholism that somehow the treatment for alcoholism also applied to Theaism. It was really interesting. When I first came to Atlantic Group, Peggy gave me a little key that said the key of willingness. Eventually, thank goodness, I did catch alcoholism. But, you know, I wasn't an alcoholic until I sat in these rooms for at least 90 days. I was not an alcoholic. You gave me alcoholism, and thank goodness. I'm so grateful today because the good news, if you're an alcoholic, we know how to help. So the steps,
Surrender. Oh, surrender. Acceptance. Come to believe in a higher power. And then turn your whole will and your life over to his, her, or its care. And then I did a fourth step, and I thought, oh, here's where I'm going to be an expert, you know, because I did all that research on the cage. The steps are nothing like anything I had done before. There is no model for this program. It is so different than anything. And I'd been a real spiritual searcher. I'd really tried a lot of different things. But, you know, my sponsor would sweetly smile at me and pat my knee and say, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you think. And that was great news. Just hurl yourself into service. I was dragged kicking and screaming into this big, beautiful, happy, wonderful, overwhelming, 5 cents short life. Dragged kicking and screaming by taking actions I didn't understand or agree with. Actions that didn't make sense to me. Actions that I knew wouldn't work. So I did the steps with my wonderful sponsor, Maureen, my first sponsor. I did four. I did it just according to the book in the columns, the four columns. That fourth column is a doozy. And I did a fifth step. It was the first time that I had ever told my entire story, all of it, not just parts of it, to one person. And that was really, that was important. The book says that that really helps you feel a part of. And it's the beginning of the end of isolation from God and our fellows. And that was true for me. Sixth step and seventh step, shortcomings and defects. Eighth step and ninth step took a long time, amends. That was wonderful, powerful. I did it with a script so that I wouldn't launch into the analysis and explanation. And that really helped me. It was the last thing I thought would be useful to me, but as with many things, it turned out to be a lifesaver. And now I'm living happily in 10, 11, and 12. And as I say, it's really beyond my wildest dreams. After a while, after I'd done that first round, I want to talk a little bit about recovery. I didn't graduate. I never stopped going to meetings. But I started to kind of riff on a theme. I kind of, you know, did my own thing for a little while. I was moving a lot. And because I went to school and then I went to grad school. And so it required a lot of relocations. And when I would get really adjusted to the way a group does something, and then I would move to a new town, and there would seem to be like a whole bunch of really important things to do besides go to meetings. And so it was hard to get grounded again, hard to get a sponsor again, hard to get a home group again. Now, the very first day I go to a meeting, if anybody's moving or traveling, the first day when the plane lands, that's the day I go to a meeting. It's so helpful. It's such the easier, softer way. So anyway, what happened to me after I kind of just got a little away from service is I found myself at 12 years hitting a crashing, crushing emotional bottom. And I was so mad at my higher power. How could this happen to me? I never stopped going to meetings and I wasn't drinking. But I was just as miserable as I had been before I ever came here when I was 9 and feeling suicidal. And I lived at 902 North Dodge Street in Iowa City at the time. I had moved there from New York. And who should move in at 903 North Dodge Street, directly across the street from me, coming from Los Angeles, but Cindy C., my current sponsor. And I was, as I say, just, you know, a train wreck. And she said, I can help you. The same thing happened to me at 12. And I said, great, I really need help, I'm really willing. And she said, I'm going to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, maybe you didn't hear me, I've been sober for 12 years and I've been through the steps. She said, not like this. And we went through the steps, very simply, by the book, and in a way that I hadn't quite done it before. And it's changed my life. I have never hit that bottom. That was 13, almost 14 years ago. It was 14 years ago. And I've never hit that kind of bottom again. Now I might. And I know who to go to. If I were to drink today, I know who to go to. I would ask one of my sponsees to sponsor me because they've gone through the steps in the way that worked for me. I passed on to them exactly what was given to me. I carried the message to them, and I know that they've done that work and they've walked that walk. If I drank, I would go right back to them and ask them to take me through the steps, and I know it would work. If you're new, I want to say welcome. You're in for the ride of your life. The cage is gone. The steps, AA, patted my knee, said, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you think. Would you swing that door open so you can start being useful around here? We've got some chairs to set up and some ashtrays and a whole bunch of jobs to do. So just swing the door open. And I said, but you don't understand. And they said, well, I don't really have to understand, and I don't care to understand. Just come on out with us. And the miracle of willingness, sometimes referred to as the gift of desperation, came into my heart. And I did it. I can't really understand why we do it in that moment. You know, someone says, do you want what we have? And everything inside you says, no! And you have this surreal out-of-body experience where you hear your voice, your own voice, say, yes, please. I learned how to say yes in this room, and I've been saying yes ever since. And it was a great gift, because before this, before Alcoholics Anonymous, it was always, no, not you, not here, not now, not that color, a little bit different. It just was not quite right. And now I don't even think about that. I just suit up, show up, say yes, and it works. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be out of the cage because I get to be with all of you. And if you're new and you think it's not going to work for you, that's okay. You can think that. I still think that today. And I still have that chatter in my head. Don't even care. I let it chatter while I'm tying up my shoes and grabbing my coat and walking out to my meeting. It chatters while the phone's ringing and I pick it up and it's a sponsee. I don't care about those voices anymore. They don't govern me anymore. I still have them. I don't try to manage them. I don't care if they stay or leave, but they don't rule me anymore. So if you think it's not going to work for you, that's okay. Just keep coming back. Get a sponsor, get a home group, and do whatever your sponsor says. The more crazy those ideas are, the better they seem to work. Don't ask me to explain it, but I'm happy to carry the message. Thank you all so much. I'm grateful for my sobriety.